Hello and welcome to the IDEA State Complaint Resource Center podcast series. Today is May 9th, 2014, and this is Candace Cortiella, Director of the Advocacy Institute. The IDEA State Complaint Resource Center is a new project of the Advocacy Institute. It is designed to provide information and resources to assist parents and advocates in navigating the complaint process with a particular focus on systemic noncompliance issues. Our guests today are two people who played critical roles in a state complaint filed in 2011 regarding practices of Ohio's Upper Arlington City School District. Kerry Agins is an attorney with the law firm of Siegel, Agins, and Gilman, located in the Columbus and Cleveland area, and Brenda Loezen is a parent advocate working in the Columbus, Ohio area. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Sandra.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so Kerry, I'd like to start with you. I wanted to let everybody know that we have posted on our website both the complaint that you and your colleague Andrea Valentino filed against the Upper Arlington City School District, as well as the letter of findings issued by the Ohio Department of Education. So those documents are available for people. The complaint itself is quite lengthy because it covered a number of students. So if you would, just to begin with, just give us a very brief overview of the major IDEA violations that you alleged in your complaint.
Absolutely. You know, it was what is outlined, I think, relatively clearly at the beginning of the complaint for anyone who's able to reference it. On page 3 is a description of the problem. What we wanted to do was to lay out a broad picture perspective of the issues, and we did so hopefully in a way that would be readily identifiable to both the investigator and to anybody who needed to review this at a later date. The main violations that we alleged were that there was a pattern and practice of a willful violation of IDEA by the Upper Arlington City School District by failing to properly identify and evaluate students with disabilities under the category of specific learning disability, by using an intervention process to delay or deny evaluations to students who were struggling, and in failing to properly evaluate and identify students with specific learning disabilities, they thereby failed to meet their child find obligations and violated the educational rights of the students and the procedural safeguards that are afforded by IDEA.
So the to kind of put a name on it, the process that you describe as being used to delay or deny evaluations is frequently referred to as response to intervention. Is that correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay.
And what we were alleging specifically was that students were entered into an RTI process that they never escaped.
Correct. Okay. So, Brenda, tell us what the role that you played as an advocate in uncovering the systemic violations that were occurring in Upper Arlington.
Sure. Well, I had been invited to attend an evening gathering of parents at someone's home. Among the parents, I want to say at the initial meeting, maybe there were 10, 12 families. They were asking me questions with respect to interventions and supports and eligibility, and as each parent was sharing their experience, I noticed a pattern. All of their kids were receiving services. They weren't exactly sure what those services were or under what umbrella for many, many years. And none of the children had been identified with any eligibility opportunity under IDEA, no IEP. There were no multifaceted evaluations being completed. The parents knew for sure their children were receiving interventions and they weren't making progress. So that was the tone of the evening, so I knew there was something very interesting about every person's response, and I knew there was probably a larger issue.
So what steps did you take to?
Well, I I think the parents left that evening with an understanding that they would need to bring me their records because they weren't very clear about the timelines. They weren't very clear about any documentation that had been shared with them from the school. And one by one, families were bringing me whatever records they had. Some families had to go to the school and request copies of documentation that had been sent to them. And I met with each and every family individually to try to uncover where were their child initially, where were the problems, when did it start? And it was one by one, case by case. And I think at the end of the process, I had 12 families with almost identical scenarios in timeline, in interventions that weren't working. And I began to speak with them about the idea that this is not only an issue for you and your child, this is an issue that I believe to be systemic for the district. So.
Okay. And was it difficult to move the families along in that line of thinking?
Yes. There was a lot of fear, I think, from each of the families, what this would mean, what are the implications, what do you do? I think for many of the families, I took them back to the school. We had meetings with their particular team, and we tried to move it forward. In some cases, the children were then beginning the process of an evaluation determination. For other children, they really didn't want to move them outside of the RTI interventions, even though they weren't working. But it took some time. And as I met with each of the families individually, they were also meeting for coffee amongst themselves, and it was a very organic process. And they realized there is an issue. And I introduced the idea of bringing in an attorney to review the information that I had reviewed and to have her weigh in on what she would recommend moving forward. So,
you know, I think to add to that, Candace, I think Brenda downplayed a little bit her role and how significant it was in trying to identify the consistency of the difficulty that each family had and how similar their stories were. And obviously from an evidence perspective, I can't do anything with a violation without firm evidence. And she not only looked at the individual student records, but also did a public records request for copies of all of the district's policies and procedures, the district's records that they had kept as part of committees that met to review their RTI process. And so she not only looked at individual student records, but also at the district policies and procedures as a whole mm-hmm. to try to see where those may be deficient and why the teams were operating the way they were in maintaining this RTI process that really led to nowhere. Mm-hmm. And so when I did start to meet with the families, a lot of that homework had already been done.
Yes, and thank you for that. One of the reasons why we started this project is because we feel not only that this IDEA state complaint process is underutilized, but also that Special Education Advocates, which is a group that we have particularly focused on since we started our institute, are in a unique position to identify issues of systemic noncompliance versus, you know, just individual occurrences. So
sure.
I think that's one of the main pieces I wanted to make sure people that we communicated today. So tell us, Carrie, basically what the outcome was of the complaint.
Well, we were very fortunate that the outcome of the complaint was successful for the families that participated in the filing. After we reviewed all of the information that was brought to the table by the individual families, as well as the policies and procedures that the district had in their records as a whole, we were really able to line those two things up. And the Ohio Department of Education really performed a very thorough investigation of the complaint. They met individually with every family that participated in the complaint. They reviewed thousands of pages of documentation. Each family put together their own packet of information. We also had affidavits from every single one of the participants that outlined their story in a way that was easily accessible to the investigation team. And they issued their written findings. And in their written findings, what the Ohio Department of Education determined was that the district failed to consistently comply with policies that they had in effect to properly identify children who were suspected of having a specific learning disability, that the students were indeed subject to an intervention process that didn't address or resolve their academic difficulties, that they were denied a timely evaluation as a result of that process, that children were not referred for evaluations until the parents had repeatedly requested evaluations or brought their own data from private evaluations to their teams to support the need to identify the students. They also found that the district had implemented a particular evaluation process that was confusing to families, that they didn't really know what an IDEA evaluation was versus an evaluation for an RTI process. And finally, that whole process led to violations of child find, violations in the area of initial evaluations of students, general provisions of appropriate educational services, and also procedures for identifying children with specific learning disabilities. And so we were very fortunate that the Ohio Department of Education saw what we saw in the pattern that we had identified, and they issued corrective action. And the corrective action is actually in the letter of findings at the very back, and it's relatively detailed. Some of the highlights really included a memorandum, technical support, and professional development for all staff in the proper use of an RTI procedure, in evaluation requirements, in referral requirements for students with suspected disabilities to participate in an IDEA evaluation. There was oversight provided by the Ohio Department of Education for a period of a year to ensure that referrals were evaluated, the children were evaluated appropriately, and that these inappropriate application of policies was stopped immediately. And I think that the combination of both the correction to the policies and procedures, the professional development, as well as the ongoing oversight was critical to the resolution of the family's concern. And I think, too, beyond just the what was ordered, eventually the district did really willingly start to participate in creating improved procedures. And so we've seen a growth since this complaint that's really been remarkable.
So, one of the reasons that we have put a lot of time and energy into posting complaints and letters of findings on our website is so that attorneys and advocates and parents who are contemplating filing a complaint on a particular issue can, in fact, look at complaints filed on that issue. And in particular, they can look at the corrective action that was ordered by the State Department of Education. Because in many cases, these are very broad and deep corrective action plans, which might go much further than what we would contemplate as putting in our initial complaint as a remedy. So we shouldn't be shy about our proposed remedies in state complaints. Would you agree?
Absolutely. We really struggled when we were putting together our complaint with what it was we wanted to ask for. Because when you're putting together a systematic violation argument, you're really not focusing on the individual needs of each particular child. You're focusing on a policy development, a procedural change or shift in culture. We elected to separate very clearly the remedies that we were seeking on behalf of the group from the remedies that we were seeking on behalf of the individual students. The individual students pursued their remedies for any kind of violation of Child Find or free appropriate public education as it pertains to their education separately. So we focused heavily in our corrective action on, again, policies, procedures, and corrective action that would benefit the district as a whole and the students in the district.
So, in fact, a question for you, Brenda. So filing a – participating in a group complaint doesn't preclude the individual parents from also filing their own complaint. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And yep. And what would be the important points that they would need to keep in mind to distinguish between the two? Just that their complaint is going to focus entirely on what they want for their individual child as compensation,
yes.
Basically.
Correct, and that's very unique to the student and the situation. So it's really about digging into the data and looking at what is appropriate in terms of a remedy for that particular child.
Mm-hmm. And Carrie, do you feel it's important for parents to have legal counsel when preparing a state complaint? You know, we have an article on our we've actually quoted from an article by Perry Zirkel on our website that that one of the reasons this is an attractive avenue for parents is because it really doesn't require legal counsel, and it also doesn't necessarily lead to the same very adversarial relationship that you get, you know, when you use the due process complaint route. But I know that you and your colleague worked quite hard on preparing the complaint for the parent. So what are your feelings about that?
Well, I'm going to give you a typical lawyer answer and tell you that it depends.
Okay.
You know, I have been involved in a few systemic complaint violations that have been alleged by groups of families. And, you know, I think that the one thing that we're very careful of as attorneys, and something I think really helped to focus the families on the individual remedy versus a group remedy, we need to be careful to protect the family's entitlement to pursue a due process remedy of their own, if that's something that they would like to do. I think also helping to define the scope of a group complaint can be very difficult, particularly where students have been harmed as a result of the violation. You know, sometimes we have a violation of a policy that really may not have led to individual student harm. And I think that those policies are much more difficult or easy to challenge because there's not a lot of emotion involved. But I think the one thing that attorneys and also advocates do very well is trying to focus the violation on a particular requirement of IDEA as opposed to a very broad allegation that they're doing something wrong that violates my child's right to FAPE. If we can pinpoint what it is about the policy or the practice that violates IDEA, I think that we see a much more targeted response from at least our state complaint investigators. Also, just being able to identify what all of the legal issues are and focus those arguments, that's what we learn in law school. So although there are some people that are very gifted in just being able to organize their thoughts in that way, and I certainly don't think just attorneys could do it, I do think that attorneys can be helpful in the process.
Mm-hmm.
But the state complaint process as a whole is absolutely one that parents should avail themselves of because it is a less costly way of resolving an issue with their child's school. But at least in our state, it can be challenging to get the same kind of remedies with a state complaint as you would with a due process. I don't know that that's necessarily the way it should be, but it is. And there are times that I will recommend a particular strategy just based on what the violation is. So I think even if you don't have an attorney involved in the actual drafting of the complaint or filing of the complaint, sometimes just consulting with an attorney on developing a strategy or a scope could be helpful.
Yes, and I think this issue of scope is particularly important, and I appreciate you focusing on it. We have an article on our website written by Sonia Kerr, who is a special education attorney in Philadelphia with the public interest law firm there. And
she's wonderful, by the way.
Yes, everybody loves Sonia. And she's written an article for us with some tips for filing state complaints, and that's one of her tips, you know, that you need to really focus on probably a single issue. And while it could be tempting, and I have seen state complaints that have 20 different allegations, okay, and I think your point is perfect, that the state is going to have a really hard time, you know, wading through all of this as opposed to picking, you know, what is the most harmful issue or egregious, or however you want to call it. And then, of course, if the state is getting a lot of complaints on that particular issue, it should actually set off some alarm bells for them. And that's actually in issuing the 2006 federal regulations to IDEA, the U.S. Department of Education even stated that, you know, the state complaint system is one way that states can actually kind of keep an eye out for issues that are appearing over and over again as across the state. It's a helpful tool for them in their monitoring and compliance role.
Candace, the process by which a state education department might be alerted that there is a systemic issue here, it's called a selective review process. And that has happened in some of my districts where multiple families have filed complaints on behalf of their children, and it reached a level that it flagged the folks at the Department of Education to say, hey, we think there's something else going on here. We're going to step in and take a look. So that has been very effective.
Yeah, that's terrific to know. You had told me that earlier, and I haven't heard that term from people in other states. But maybe we need to promote that as an approach that states should use. So you've given us lots of wonderful information. So you have indicated that in fact it's about 2.5 years since you filed the complaint, and you now say that in fact not only did the State Department do a good job in investigating and presenting their letter of findings and their corrective action, but that it actually has been taken to heart by the school district and they have been changing their behavior. Somebody want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brenda probably sees it a lot more than I do because she's with more families, but just from my perspective, from a very broad perspective, and then I'll have Brenda respond more specifically. I think that no district is perfect for every child, but this school district has really taken the time to embrace the changes that they needed to make in order to have a truly collaborative approach with parents, a good systematic approach to their response to intervention. They have implemented collaborative relationships with several families that brought the complaint, as well as other members of their community to really work through a targeted renewal of their response to intervention, as well as their programming for students with specific learning disabilities. And so I think that with the addition of some new staff, particularly at leadership levels, the district has really changed the culture with which they address these matters, and I'll let Brenda talk to you more about how really well they've done with that.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. Change the culture is really accurate. What is happening now in the Upper Arlington City School District is significantly different from many years ago in everything that was alleged and later introduced through the letter of findings. So the child find policies and procedures are really being adhered to. The district is also being more targeted in understanding when are children struggling, what are the appropriate interventions, how is that being monitored, how are we involving the parents in the decision-making process with respect to identifying kids who need help. And that ongoing, that continued collaboration that we're seeing in Upper Arlington has been really remarkable. So the parents are feeling very much that they are a part of this process.
Well, that gets us to a wonderful ending for everyone involved, and I think speaks volumes for the efforts that both of you put in to the work. And we would very much like to see, you know, similar types of complaints executed around the country where there is, in fact, a great deal of systemic noncompliance going on.
You know,
go ahead.
I apologize, Candace. I just wanted to say that really I don't think Brenda and I feel like we did the bulk of the work needed to do this complaint. It really was the parents that
right.
were involved.
Sure.
No doubt. And continue to be very, very involved, continue to meet with administrators and principals at the building level, and the engagement is significantly improved, but very qualitative, very,
right.
very qualitative.
I mean, they really dedicated about a 2 years to the investigation, the process, the initial phases of the resolution of these issues, and really without a dedicated core of parents, and I've seen it successful where there's one or two parents, but in this instance there was such a core of parents that were eager to participate and drive this that that I really can't state enough how important it is to not lose momentum and to not lose confidence and to continue to pursue your goals. Particularly if faced with you know, delay tactics or people that don't want to meet and talk to you and just kind of continuing to keep the faith and work through the process despite sometimes the frustration with how long it might take.
Yes, and clearly we can't say enough about the parents of kids with disabilities who are willing to work with their district on, you know, to improve the overall system as opposed to, you know, their focus being entirely on their own child. So we
a huge learning curve for the families. They
yeah,
really
sure.
were quite, the statement that was said several times to me when I was meeting with the families early on is they felt that they were flying in the dark. And to this day, when a parent comes to me and they say, I'm so confused, I don't know where to begin, they'll say, I think I'm flying in the dark. I don't know. And that resonates for me, something that is very, very common in families who are somewhere in this process trying to find their way out in an effort to help their child. So,
right. Well, thank you both so much for spending some time with us and, again, for contributing your complaint to our website. That was enormously helpful, and I know that it was a great deal of work to redact that complaint for us, so we appreciate being able to offer it on our website as so that people can hear. Again, it's very helpful for others to be able to look at how the complaints are structured. So with that, we'll thank you for being with us and hope to work with you again in the future.
Thank you very much, and thank you for establishing a clearinghouse for this kind of complaint and for, you know, for us to see the efforts of other people in the country that are doing these things. So thank you as well.
Yeah, thank you, Candace. We appreciate the opportunity.